Welcome to Clippings, the official podcast of the Council for Nail Disorders, where Drs. April Schachtel and Catherine Stiff take a closer look at articles and clippings published on all things nail disease. Listeners can suggest articles for this podcast or topics of discussion by sending an email to kristen.cnd@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Hello, and welcome to episode 41 of the Clippings podcast, where we review nail papers and share them with you. I'm April Schachtel, and I'm joined today by my co-host.
Hello, I'm Catherine Stiff.
I'll be sharing with you an article today entitled "Surgical Site Infections Are Uncommon Following Nail Biopsies in a Single Center Case Control Study of 502 Patients." This article comes to us from authors Eaton Axler, Angela Liu, Megan Darrell, Ola Fellemeyer, and Sherry Lipner, and it's been accepted for publication into the JAD in May of 2024. These authors reviewed patient charts of patients who underwent a nail biopsy at Cornell Medical Center between 2013 and 2023. Their goal was to determine the prevalence and risk factors for skin and surgical site infections after nail procedures. They defined the surgical site infections as symptoms of infection like erythema, swelling, pus, and excessive pain that happened fewer than 30 days after the procedure, as well as a positive wound culture. The data was then reviewed by an infectious disease specialist who was one of the authors, who scored the potential infections as very likely, likely, or not likely. So of the 502 patients who underwent a nail unit biopsy in that time frame, 14 developed infections. The mean time was 8 days. 80% of the infections were on the fingernails. The organisms were about a third methicillin sensitive staph aureus, a third coag negative staph, and about a third staph lichdenensis. They found that type 2 diabetes was associated with an infection risk, but age, smoking, race, ethnicity, and surgical site were not. Ultimately, this was a low surgical site infection rate of less than 3%, which was in line with some prior studies in the Mohs literature. They noted that their cleaning protocol before nail procedures is 2% chlorhexidine followed by 70% isopropyl alcohol twice, which may have contributed to this low risk of surgical site infection. I'm sure it did. They are also a major nail surgery referral center, so the limitations of the article include the single institution design and retrospective nature. I have already used this data when I discuss the risk of possible surgical site infections with my patients when I'm performing a nail biopsy, so I hope it's helpful to you as well.
Yes, agreed. It's nice to have something to reference for that.
Awesome. What did you read about?
This month, I am also doing an article from JAD titled "Utility of Imaging in Diagnosing Subungual Glomus Tumors, a Single Center Retrospective Study," by Deborah Lee, Rachel Hill, Amar Desai, and Sherry Lipner, e-published ahead of print on April 6th, 2024. Now, glomus tumors are often in the distal digit, including the nail unit, and the utility of imaging is controversial. X-ray can detect bony erosions, which are not always present. MRI evaluates tumor location and size with a specialized coil for the digit, but is expensive. These authors reviewed 30 patients with clinical suspicion for subungual glomus tumors who underwent X-ray, MRI, and nail excision. Out of 30 suspected cases, 19 were histopathologically confirmed glomus tumors. Patients with glomus tumors reported intermittent pain 3.4 times more often than non-glomus tumors. X-ray imaging was negative in all patients. MRI was positive in 89% of confirmed glomus tumors compared to 18% of non-glomus tumors and had 94% sensitivity, 80% specificity, and approximately 90% positive and negative predictive value for glomus tumor diagnosis. And for those biopsy-proven glomus tumors, the size on MRI was similar to the actual tumor size, which was not the case for the non-glomus tumors. So in conclusion, X-ray doesn't seem to play a big diagnostic role in glomus tumors. MRI is helpful to distinguish between glomus and non-glomus tumors and provides information that can be useful for surgical planning. If a patient presents with classic clinical findings and intermittent pain, imaging may not be needed. And future studies could potentially investigate the utility of Doppler ultrasound, as this will be a more affordable modality.
I completely agree with their conclusions. It seems to me the only reason to get an X-ray in a patient you suspect of having a glomus tumor is if you really want to get an MRI, but the insurance makes you get an X-ray first.
Very true.
All right. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Clippings. I want to thank our listeners for their attention. Please share this podcast with your colleagues and trainees and let us know how we're doing and which articles you would like us to review on the show by contacting kristen.cnd@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at naildisorders.